I hope you're ready. It's that time.
This is going to be cool.
Climb aboard for the radio ride known as Sports Talk.
A day that will live in sports radio infamy.
Brought to you by Guarantee RV.
We're talking the big deal, the real deal.
On Highway 99 in Junction City. Online at GuaranteeRV.com.
I am not only drinking the Kool-Aid, I'm the manufacturer.
I am losing my mind.
Tannen, it might be semi-circle time.
Hi, I'm Steve, and, well, I brought a list.
And now, a guy with tons and tons of issues.
Yeah, I kind of do have issues.
And broadcasting them, searching for answers.
What the hell are we doing?
It's Steve Tannen.
Time for the show that we call Sports Talk. I love just off the top of the head just coming up with lyrics that make absolutely no sense. There was a movie with Jack Lemmon and the guy who played the Rockford Files. I'm forgetting his name now. The reason being, well, I'm a putz. But the thing was, they were former presidents, and they got together, and James Garner, thank you very much. And as former presidents, they obviously, when they enter a room, well, maybe not in their own homes, unless they're really lunatics, you know, every time you hear Hail to the Chief. Run, dun, 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 dun. And they asked, James Garner asked Jack Lemmon, so in your head, when you heard Hail to the Chief, did you have your own lyrics? And Jack Lemmon said something along the lines of, no, do you? And he goes, of course I did. And Garner says, in my mind, it was, Hail to the Chief, if you don't, I'm gonna kill you. Oh. It was like, and now, of course, the movie's like 25 years old. Every time I hear that, no matter who is standing in front of the presidential seal, I hear the late James Garner in me head.
Well, it's like the lyrics that you have for when USC comes to town. I hope you die a horrible death. I hope it's slow.
And
I hope it hurts.
And as you well know, being sad enough to have to work with somebody of my ilk.
Yeah, it's bad.
Well, it's and it was born of two things: alcohol and losing gambling. So, and by the way, I noticed something because I knew the fight song, Fight On, prior to living in a wonderful college town like Eugene. And if you, you know, because they're such a major institution, when the Trojans travel, they bring their fabulous marching band with them. And they play two songs. Or. So. So I think it's the 05 game. I think it's the 05 game. Bush and Leinart and Lendale White. And at the time, what we thought we might be witnessing, the greatest college team of all time. And so we used to sit in Section 11 at the, you know, right behind the duck bench. And our friend Kathy, at one point, one of the sweetest, nicest, smartest people you'll ever meet, she just, as they're kicking the crap out of the Ducks, they score another touchdown, and they start playing it, they stop, and she just stands up and yells, "Shut up!" At the top, she had reached a breaking point. Oh, man, I will never forget that. It was one of my highlights. And by the way, the best part about it is obviously Autzen is sold out. There's like 58,000 people there. We're on the 50-yard line. They literally couldn't be much farther away in the stands. And, it was a thing of beauty. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's bring in the other Steve. How you doing, Steve?
I'm fine. That other piece of music that you described, not Fight On, that's obvious.
Right.
The other one, it's called Triumph, I believe.
Yes, right.
And it was written especially for USC by Dmitri Tiomkin.
Who is?
He is the famous late writer of music for motion pictures. He did High Noon. He won an Academy Award for it.
Cool.
Yeah.
That's actually a great piece of info.
Oh, he was big time back then, and he wrote that especially for the then nearly invincible Trojans. The good news about the Trojans in the last 20 years is that the Ducks, for the most part, have pretty much stood on even terms with them. They when they've had to play them, we've missed them the last couple of years.
Yeah, couple years.
I was there for the that wonderful Halloween experience.
Oh, in 09. That was like the changing of the guard.
Oh, that was a joyful evening. And, you know, I used to, when I lived down there, because I liked good college football, I used to, through a friend of mine at work, she had got season tickets and kept an extra one through a divorce situation. and she was an old sorority girl from USC, but just to annoy her, I would go to see all her games, and I always wore the other team's colors, and God help me, even Washington.
Oh, wow, nice. Just for torment?
I caught such hell, but I was there. I'll tell you what, I was there on the night in 1971 when the Ducks came into the Coliseum and actually beat them, beat USC that night. And Fouts was injured. He didn't play. I can't remember the name of that backup quarterback. He was a very short guy, but they kept running. Oh, my brain is going away. But the type of offense that they ran.
Student body right. Oh, no, that was USC.
Yeah, that was USC. No, it was a, I can't remember the term for it, but he'd glide down the line. And there'd be an opening, and he would run right underneath the USC lineman. And the thing is that the Ducks used up most of the time in that game because they kept the ground game going.
Now, there was an irony there because when Danny O'Neill got hurt in 94, a backup, Tony Graziani, went down. And that was the first time they had beaten USC at the Coliseum since that day.
That's exactly right. The closest they came was a tie ball game, 7-7 in, I think, 80 or 81. And the SC was very lucky in that one because they got an awful, god-awful call that helped them score a touchdown in that game. Otherwise, the Ducks would have won that one 7-0.
By the way, our alert texter, the quarterback who came in for Fouts was Harvey Wynn.
That's the guy. That's right.
Gotta love our audience the best.
He was terrific that night. I'm telling you, they dominated with the ground game, and SC just couldn't get by him. Although I must say, in the last couple of minutes, SC pulled off play, and their running back ran from about his own deep in his own part of the field, ran all the way for a touchdown. They got called back on an obvious holding call. Otherwise, the Ducks would have been robbed of their victory that night. That saved them.
All right. Good trip down memory lane, Mr. Steve.
Take care.
Take it easy. The 94 game was completely out of nowhere with O'Neill hurt going down to USC. And that was one of the rare times over the past quarter century, I missed an Oregon game because I was at a hotel and a wedding in Sun River. And it was like, whenever that comes up, hey, how about that SC game in 94? Yeah, I didn't see it. Have no recollection of it. And, you know, back then you didn't do the, well, just give me a sec, give me a sec. Click, 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 press, 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 enter. I remember we literally had to, I forgot who it was. Somebody showed up and was like, Oregon's beating USC. Okay. So waited till an on the hour. Bartender, could you put ESPN on? And there, and obviously, you know, at the time, it was a lead story. I mean, you know, it was the first time Oregon had been even in the conference picture in a while. I know they started out well in 88, but then the injury to Musgrave sent them in a tailspin. In 89, although they ended up in the Independence Bowl, it wasn't a team that was really threatening USC or Washington for the conference. And of course, by the time 90, 91 rolled around, Washington under Don James had become a national power. But, you know, that 94 game, yes.
I was just wondering, back to weddings for some reason, how do you think you would do today if you had to go to a fall wedding? Like, would you be able to just be like, I have to work, I can't go, I'm sorry, I won't
yes.
be there. That would be it?
Well, first of all, my kids would know better, and they're all married, so that's
sounds
not
like
on the table anymore.
It sounds slightly like a threat.
Well, the best part about it is I got married in July, my son got married in July, my daughter got married in July.
Smart people.
Yeah, well, if they wanted help paying for the wedding, they knew.
Because I feel like if there was something that, you know, somebody you knew that you were really good friends with was getting married, and you were like, they asked you to be like a part of the ceremony, like you weren't like the best man, but you were one of the groomsmen, and they're like, and I'm getting married the third Saturday in October. I don't think you would be able to make it. Like, I think you would have to like have an earbud in and somebody like broadcast, like calling in to your phone, just reading off scores and stats of games that are happening. Because I don't think you would be able to make it through that wedding without
I'll
checking
tell you
your
what.
Phone.
In because I worked in music, even though I was our sportscaster and I did go to a lot of the Oregon games, the Cal game in 94 was here and I didn't go, but I didn't have any responsibilities and I wasn't a season's ticket holder, so it wasn't like I had to make arrangements. My sister got married then. She would then that was wedding number one. Wedding number two was a more June wedding.
Right.
So, but it's an interesting point. And I don't think there's anybody that close to me that could possibly have a wedding right now because, I mean, if somebody my age gets married, it's their second or third wedding, it's like, dude, when I make it back east, we'll celebrate. I'm not doing my job because you're having wedding number three or something ridiculous like that. You know, you got to put a limit on these things.
That's true. Because, like, a lot of my friends are, like, not married yet, but maybe slowly,
oh, yeah,
like, thinking.
You're in the wheelhouse.
I'm about to get stuck in a lot of, like, fall weddings. There was some friends of ours that went to OSU, and she got married, and her birthday or wedding was during, like, an Oregon, you know, weekend thing where just, like, she just doesn't get, like, she's inviting OSU and Oregon people to a wedding where they, like, they both had home games that week or something. It's like, how do you not get sports that much? Why do you really think this is gonna be like
yeah,
a
like,
good
and
idea?
Who are you friends with?
Right. I mean, you know, she wasn't like a big sports fan, and neither is her husband. So, like, it kind of makes sense. But then at the same time, like, it was all kind of we could talk about. It's like, really, a fall wedding? This is like a thing that people actually do when, like, football season is happening. You're like, oh, let's also get married, because that sounds like.
But harkening back, so you're 26?
Yes.
Okay. So in 1986, all of us were born in 1960. So our 26th year, a guy who I was best man in his wedding, he was best man at my wedding, he got married on October 5th.
Oh.
Now, you got to understand something. We didn't care about college, so. And they didn't get married on Saturday. They got married on Sunday.
Oh, boy.
Both of them, because it was 3 weeks apart. October 5th, Eddie and Elaine at the Meadowlands Hilton, and it was the year the Giants were on their first ever Super Bowl run. So he gets married, and by the way, at the time, the Jets were en route to a 10-1 start and a playoff appearance, and while among my friends it was probably 70-30 Jets and Giants fans in favor of the Giants, everybody was a Jet or Giant fan. So Ding and Dong decide they got to get married in October during football season, and we busted their gacalions all day and night because, as for those of you who know, if there's a difference between going to a ceremony, going to a reception, and being in the wedding when you are available. You were at a beck and call. We need you for pictures there. You got to do this. You have these responsibilities. And again, I didn't bring a transistor radio. It was the 80s. I didn't have a device. So we ended up missing that.
See, I'm trying to have that experience happen to you, but like just like now. And you're just like, you're trying to get through the wedding and you're just trying not to look at your phone because you're so respectful of your friend who they're getting married to. And just like you're all in on that. But at the same time, you're like, I need to know the score of the Giants game. I need to know what's going on.
What I would have to do.
There's a playoff game. There's basketball. There's hockey. I need to look at my phone for just 35 seconds. And then you pull it out and you're just going to get yelled at.
Oh, absolutely. Although, with my really good friends, it would be we would all get yelled at. And at, you know, the interesting thing is when I think of the wives, fiancés, girlfriends, they weren't really into sports in high school and college in the early 20s. Now they're all diehards. Why? Because they had kids. And it's a way, you know, everybody goes to the game, who's got season tickets. But my buddy Danny came this close to losing his life. He got married on October 26th, 1986. Now, if you know the history, 1986, he was a diehard Mets fan. And I hate to use this word. It's something we said back then. She was the boss. I believe the word was whipped. And she was like, here's where I've always wanted to get married. My parents said this is the only day it's available. So biggest one, maybe the biggest Mets fan I know is now going to get married. Most of you should be able to do the math with me here. World Series is played in what month? Just off the top of your head.
October.
Yes.
October. Right.
October. So 1986, what pops into your head? Oh, the Mets in their first World Series since we were in middle school.
Oh, okay. All right.
And
sure.
We had gone to a bunch of games that year. Maybe. I mean, that year I probably went to 15, 16 Yankee games, 12 or 13 Mets games. Yankees were pretty good. They faded at the end. Obviously, the Red Sox won the division. And so you fast forward to the 1986 World Series. So I said he got married October 26th. October 25th was a Saturday night. Let's see if you guys recognize what it was. The Buckner game.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So everybody is in he's got family from in and out, and they're like, people are asking him, what in the actual? And first of all, you don't know that it's going to turn out like this because you plan a wedding a year in advance, 8 months in advance. But if you know Danny, we used to call it typical Danny luck. So now
everybody knows the guy like that. Just like, yeah. Oh, classic so-and-so, no. Couldn't catch a break, schedules his wedding. That's the year the Mets make the World Series.
We would call it a bunch of Danny luck, Danny-itis, a Danny-ism. It's just we can go on and on and on and on and on and on and on. So to make matters worse, now Game 7 is scheduled for his wedding day.
Lovely.
But Danny-itis took a break. It poured, and they postponed the game early. So he knew he was off the hook. Yeah, Game 7 of the 86 series was pushed back to Monday.
If that's not a sign, that's absolutely a sign from above that, like, look, okay, I'm going to give you this one. You can get married, and then you can also enjoy your team, win a World Series on back-to-back days. I'm going to give you that one. You know what, Danny? I've given you enough bad luck. Have this one on me.
And he was able to. He had an early flight. The car picked him up, and he was, you know, we were back east. He went to Lake Jamaica on his honeymoon, which is only about a 2-hour flight. So by the time he got there, it was noon. He was able to, on the first day of his honeymoon, and he took pictures. It was like, you know, Jamaica was basically a lot of people from Boston, a lot of East Coasters there, and like every bar on the island had Game 7 of the World Series. Except it was also a coincidence that the Giants, in the midst of their, I got to double check the math on this, but I'm pretty sure, in the midst of their first ever Super Bowl run on that Monday, were playing Monday Night Football against Washington. And Washington and the Giants were going to the wire. Yeah, there it is. Washington at Giants. Giants beat them 27-20. And now the thing you have to understand is back then, it wasn't like now where you get a cable splitter. My buddy Chris, who lived behind me, and then there was a street behind that. So he had everybody over to watch Game 7 of the Mets and the Giants at Washington. I remember I had to bring a TV I had. His dad was really handy, got a cable splitter, and because just in those days, you could have just set it up with the rabbit ears. But no, he got the cable splitter. And
did you have to like rent a truck to move your TV? Because I'm imagining it being
it
about the size of this.
It was a pretty damn big TV.
I'm imagining it being the size of this room and just like little Stevie
I'll tell you what,
picking it up
no.
and walking it two blocks.
It was me and my buddy Billy in his pickup truck, put it in the back, backing it up to Mort's house so we could watch Game 7 of the World Series. And at the time, the Giants and Washington, I mean, this was Week 8, you know, they were both 6-2. It was really big, and that was a good team. It was the year after Theismann got his knee snapped, and Jay Schrader was the quarterback, but he took him all the way to the NFC title game. So for New York fans, that's a hell of a night where you could watch one team in Game 7 of the World Series, and the other one, because of a rain delay, is also on Monday Night Football, the first time they would ever make a Super Bowl run and actually win the Super Bowl. Whew, yeah, that's a lot to take in. And that was a 3-week period. Getting married, New York, diehard New York fans getting married in October on a Sunday, not even a Saturday, where it's like, you know, you could party like rock stars, like the degenerates we were, get up in the little in the morning, little steak and eggs and Bloody Mary, and you watch your football. But no.
I'm worried about which one of my friends is going to end up getting married on it, because all of my friends, the ones I can think of that I would like more than likely be invited to their weddings, they're all sports fans, and I would like to think they know to avoid the fall wedding, you know, the problem of doing that and how big of an issue it would be. I feel like most of my friends would be able to avoid that, but someone's going to fall into the trap of like, this was my fiance's dream destination and the only weekend was available was, you know, the last Sunday in October, and you've got like 15 different sports going on, and just like, that's going to end up happening to me. And I feel like it's going to happen. I don't know why.
Well, we all survived. We partied at both weddings like degenerate 25 and 6-year olds, and one marriage is still going strong, 3 kids. The other one I don't think lasted the decade, and that was my buddy Danny. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Somebody just made a good rule: you can have a fall wedding on a Wednesday. There you go. End of list. All right, to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline we go. Let's bring in Chuck. Chuck, good afternoon. How's it going?
Hey, man. I remember when I played actually in Autzen Stadium. I was never very good. It was right after it was first built. And like in about, I want to say 1973, 4, maybe 5, Reggie Ogborn played for the Ducks. I never heard you guys talk about him, but he, and I don't even remember who the coach was. It's so long ago, I'm 67. But I remember getting a Volkswagen van and driving down to Cal to watch Cal just rip us up. And then we went the next day to watch the Chargers play the Raiders. And sitting in the stands, and we're every time Dan Fouts got the ball, we yell out, "Go Ducks!" And I've never heard you guys talk about Reggie Ogburn. We were like, you know, college age then. We didn't call him Reggie Ogburn. We called him Reggie Rugburn, because he was such a great runner, and I was wondering whatever the hell happened to that guy.
Well, you got to understand something. First, Nick is 26. When Alex has done the show, he's in his mid-30s.
I totally get that.
I didn't even move to Oregon until 1990.
I get that, but, you know, the other Steve was here. But I've never heard him talk about that, too. So maybe you get your Cracker Jack Research Institute on that. And, you know, just check him out. Because Reggie gave us hope at that point in time. And then I'm not sure. I think maybe Bill Musgrave came after that. But it was, and I can't even, I think it was before Brooks came in. Could have been Enright.
No, Chuck. Reggie Ogburn played in 79 and 80.
Okay. So,
he was 7-8 years after Fouts, and he was 7 years before Musgrave. He was like right in the middle.
Right. And that's the part that I remember that I just, you know, I don't know. I guess I need to get some memory foam or something.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. Have a good one. Hey, it happens.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk, your home for the Coors Light scoreboard and the refreshing tweet of the day. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Oregon, Michigan, and USC. And collectively, I have thought that the Pac-12 hasn't gotten enough credit, especially last season, for some of the things that they've been doing. And I think you could throw Notre Dame into the mix, too. I know people kind of like to roll their eyes at Notre Dame, but look, they've got one heck of a playoff schedule.
Playoff? That's Heather Dinich.
Playoffs?
I don't know why. I've quoted her before. We've played some of her cuts, and I realized I wasn't following her on Twitter. That's just wrong if you follow college football. She's really wired in. She does a great job. Talking about Oregon, Michigan, Notre Dame, and I forgot the other school she said. You got to be kidding me.
USC?
Was it USC? Yeah. Well, the gist of her conversation that she was having is it's not just schools who she thinks are being left out as possible playoff contenders. It's that their schedules are worthy. And, of course, you know, Oregon having the non-con with Auburn, you know, that could be a stage setter. And, by the way, this I'm not presumptuous. I'm not saying that they're a team who should absolutely be considered in the playoff mix. We don't know. They're going to have to, you know, improve offensively, obviously, win some really difficult road games. But, you know, you look at Notre Dame's schedule. I mean, if they win and won, they're going to be in, because they play at Georgia, at Stanford, at Michigan. They also play their traditional game against Southern Cal, Virginia Tech, I'm not overly familiar with Southern Cal's schedule. We were talking about them last week. I mean, they do draw Oregon out of the north. They play. Whoa. Notre Dame's road games at Washington, at Notre Dame. That's no day at the beach. They get Oregon there, and I don't know what to make of Stanford just yet, but as it may or it seem like in recent years, like Southern Cal Stanford has become like a September tradition. We mentioned UW Last week when we were going over non-conference schedules, they play Eastern Washington, Hawaii, and at BYU. No big deal there. There are road games in league at Stanford in the middle of October, at Arizona, at Beavs, at Colorado, home for the Apple Cup to wrap it, Utah, Oregon, Southern Cal, and Cal. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Theismann injury, somebody said we were talking about the 1986 season when the Mets played Game 7 against the Red Sox 2 days after the Buckner game. But Washington on Monday Night Football, that wasn't the same thing. Theismann's career ended in 1985 when, LT and Harry Carson converged on him. I think that was a mid-November game. But by 1986, he had obviously had to retire. And Jay Schrader was their quarterback. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Somebody said the Who was going to play Autzen Stadium, but Notre Dame was scheduled that weekend. So wasn't that, if memory serves correctly, and it's not my memory, it's what I've read, what I've learned as a transplant. Wasn't that like 1980 itself? So, and I'll tell you what, 10, 12 years ago, I would not even have had to look this crap up, but a decade worth extra of doing this show and all the stuff that goes in and out of my mind. I have to check on, tell you the truth, I have to check on non-New York sports for the most part. Something about Oregon, and maybe it was Toronto. Who was their starter? Was David Cohn on the 92 or the 93 team? But I always said that would have been my dream, to have Lou Holtz and Notre Dame show up here for a game. I would have absolutely poured right onto the field. I would have lose my job, lose the respect of everybody because I'm an idiot, but it would have been totally worth it. Just run at him. Tell him, you're a liar, you're a cheater, you're a fraud, and I can't stand every single solitary thing about you. So there you go. All right, so the Ducks in 1980... did not play Notre Dame. Maybe it was a year after or 2 years after that. I have early 80s in what's left of my mind. So picture what's left of your mind. Better yet, I just realized I have the best resource in the world, you guys. Okay, October 23rd, 1982. Not so far off. Notre Dame and Oregon played at Autzen, tie 13-13. So there you go, Mockingbird Lane, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. By the way, somebody said they saw the Who in 82 in Seattle with the Clash. Damn, screw sports. I'm jealous I wasn't at that. All right. London calling. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Combat Rock Tour, 1982 for the Clash. All right, to the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline we go. Bring in Wes. Wes, how's it going?
Lou Holtz, one of my favorites. He's got a voice like a cross between like Mr. Garrison on South Park and a Muppet.
And a Muppet?
And a, okay, Clash, okay. Yeah, and a Muppet. Yeah,
all
pick,
right,
pick one.
That's
pick
good stuff. I'm with you.
Oh, I hate that guy. Oh, God. Really, really a wonderful human being. Yeah.
So that was it? Just a Lou Holtz bang?
That was it? Yeah, I just wanted to just throw down on him a little bit. Just
All right. Oh, 24-7. You can call me, text me, show up at my house and say, I've had a couple of drinks. Let's rip on Lou Holtz. I'll be like, well, come on. Let's go sit outside.
Well, that would be dangerous. So, but I'm down.
All right. Thanks, Wes. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Gotta love this one. Somebody just texts, not a Ducks fan, but I hate Notre Dame. If they came here, he'd paint his face green and yellow. We would, by the way, I know that Lou Holtz wasn't the coach of Notre Dame at the time, But I'm just saying, by the time I got here in 1990, my dream was for Notre Dame to come here with Lou Holtz. So, and by the way, I'm not saying wait till after the game. I'm like, 1:27 to go in the fourth quarter, I jump onto the field and run across at Lou Holtz. So we're not talking about being rational or numerical or chronologically proper here. I'm talking about being a stark raving lunatic and getting in the face of Lou Holtz and screaming at him.
See, I always disliked Mark May more because he just didn't seem to get the joke that Lou Holtz was in on most of the time, which was just like, I'm going to turn this all back on Notre Dame because I can and I will. And Mark May was always like, no, we're talking about the Pac, like we're talking about the Big 12. Like, no one has ever played Notre Dame in the Big 12. How are you still making this about Notre Dame? And he just like couldn't get over that. And I was like, Mark, if you just leaned into the joke just a little bit.
How about like, just one punch? I guess he would have gone to jail. He's an old man.
Yeah, probably. They had the segment where like he was a judge and had a hammer. Maybe he could have slipped and it were like throwing it at him or something. And, I don't know.
Notre Dame, lean into the joke
and have a little fun.
Holtz got me so pissed off once at the TV, and I got into a dispute with somebody over it who was from the Midwest and didn't dislike Lou Holtz, didn't really know his history, and his answer to, I think, a question about LSU. So this is when Oregon started to really gain national prominence. You know, game day was here around 2000. And his response to why he thinks LSU is a contender, I'm really close, maybe not verbatim, said something like, well, you know, they play in the SEC. And I'm like, that's your response? You're a lead analyst for effing ESPN, and that's your response? And I'm screaming at the TV, and my buddy's looking at me like, what? I'm like, he's a cheater. I never referred to him for years. I just called him Sanctions Holtz from his time at Minnesota and Arkansas. And if you read Under the Tarnished Dome and what a cheater he was at Notre Dame and every place he ever went. And it's like, no, 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 do not chastise me for my contempt of Lou Holtz. It's one of the few things I actually hold near and dear in value. Plus, you're at my house, shut the hell up, go get something to drink or leave.
They put their shoes on the same way we do.
They're playing SEC, you know. Well, that's great insight, Lou, for a guy who's been in the game 96 years, you schmuck. All right, 284-8571. Breathe. Think of your yoga. Think of your Pilates. Think of your mind meld. To the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline we go. Let's bring in Cal. Cal, good afternoon. How's it going?
It's going good, buddy. How are you?
All right. What's happening?
I shouldn't have asked that. I did want to share. I was a ball boy for the Ducks during that game.
Really?
And I was usually on the home team side with Brady Brooks, Coach Brooks' son. And the athletic director at the time was Bill Byrne, and his son was the other ball boy, and he was always graciously on the visiting team side. I can't remember why, but I was on the visiting team side during that game against Notre Dame. And if you had been me, you would have had a chance to lose your job. Because I was right there the whole time.
So
and
wait,
at
is...
that time, Notre Dame coming in was the biggest deal we had ever known. You know, leading up to that, that was a big deal that game.
So Bill and Greg Byrne, related, or my?
I can't remember. I forgot his name. Bill's son.
Yeah, I thought it might be Greg.
Okay, that sounds right. He was a really great guy. So was Brady Brooks, and Rich Brooks is what was and still is well loved by his players. You know, and everybody around him. Quick example: Shelley and I were playing at Cafe 440, and he and his wife came in, and I thought I'd say hi to him. Didn't think he'd know who I was from anybody. And I walked up to him, and he grabbed me like I was his long-lost nephew. I mean, he hugged me, grabbed, sat down at the front table. We had a great time, took some photos together. I posted it on Facebook, and a whole bunch of former players made comments, and it's just, that's the legacy of Rich Brooks right there. That was great.
Nice. By the way, small world, the fact we're talking about a game you happen to be the ball boy.
Yeah. Oh, I loved being a ball boy. And in fact, that was cool. You had a caller about Reggie Ogburn. He was one of my favorite players. He was, people loved watching him play because he did have some moves on his feet.
Sure.
And he scored several touchdowns, and he was one of the only players of that era who had a little dance that he did after he scored a touchdown. He'd hold the ball with both hands in front of him, and he'd do this little hip rock. It didn't have a name because nobody named their dances in those days. They weren't very cocky, but that was really cool because they didn't flag players for a little hip rock in those days.
Amazing. So, hey, always a pleasure, Cal. Good talking to you, buddy.
You know, especially with AJ's injury, you review that tape, and he came down a little funny. It was a competition for a ball, came down. I don't think the turf had anything to do with it. That could have happened right out here. So, I enjoyed the trip up to Dayton yesterday. Got a chance to interact with some people we don't always get to see. And so unfortunate that AJ got hurt on that play, but didn't have any issue with the field.
Yeah, I want to push that into the 5 o'clock hour, the new head coach of the Bengals, Zach Taylor, saying maybe guys shouldn't be blaming the field for A.J. Green's injury. All right, don't want to run too tardy. We'll lock up the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. It's Monday. We wrap the first hour of Sports Talk, looking back at the weekend that was. Choose the performers who popped, who grabbed our attention with sports excellence. It's a little something we call Light 'Em Up.
Again, Butter, Steph Curry, his 11th three of the night.
Kobe on a spin.
Yes! What a display.
They can't believe it courtside, neither could we.
Airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree. Oh, my God.
How about another?
Win the series for the first time in 14 years!
Thanks, Mike Tirico. So yeah, like Steve said, it's the best of the best from the weekend, and who lit it up? And Steve, you get to go first.
I'm going to go with Albert Pujols. Fat Albert with a PH is lit.
It's lit! Shout out Javi! Scott! Because it's lit!
One of the premier sticks of not only his generation, but the history of our game. A mind-boggling milestone yesterday against the Orioles. Home run number 650. Only Mays, Aaron, and Ruth have done that clean. He's also joined by Bonds and A-Rod. And on that list, only the Say Hey Kid, Hammer and Hank, and A-Rod have also banged out 300 hits. Oh, he's also the first player ever with 650 homers and 650 doubles. And if not this season, next season, he's going to pass Willie Mays into fifth place on the all-time Tater list. Look, he's 39, certainly not the player or hitter he was that tore pitchers apart for 15 years, but he is a wow. And by the by, also fifth on the all-time RBI list. Albert Pujols is historically lit.
It's lit!
Compiler. Kyle Schwarber hit a baseball so hard and so far, it was literally on fire.
It's lit! Shout out Javi! Scott, because it's lit!
So for a multitude of reasons, I was watching the Sunday finale of the Brewers-Cubs series, and was it because I wanted to see how this race for the NL Central was going to end up? Sure. Was it because I had Jose Quintana and Zach Davies both starting in my fantasy league? Yes. Either way, I saw both of Kyle Schwarber's home runs on Sunday, and I'm honestly not sure I've been so shocked at both the results. The first of the two long bombs he hit Sunday was a grand slam, and had it just been a solo home run, it was actually hit so far it should have been worth four. When the ball left the bat, I knew it was a home run. It just had that kind of look. Then I looked down and saw that Christian Yelich didn't even move. Then I looked up and saw that there was a man in a jersey standing at the top row of the second deck in Miller Park that jumped out of surprise that a baseball landed next
next to him because he was 473 feet away. Schwarber's second home run was just as much of a shock as the first, hitting a low and outside pitch that wasn't thrown all that hard and pretty much did it with one hand and having it land 390 feet later in the Cubs' bullpen. He finished with 3 hits and 7 RBIs. It's not a bad day. Pretty lit.
It's lit!
Next up, the best golfer in the world, Brooks Koepka, is lit.
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy! Scott! Because it's lit!
You know, despite winning 4 majors, including the PGA and U.S. Open back-to-back, some poked a bit of fun because it appeared he didn't have interest in any tournaments outside the Slam events. And if you're going to focus on the majors, well, do it like Koepka, who this year joined only Tiger in 05, Jack in 73, and Jordan Spieth in 2015 as the only players ever to finish in the top 4 of all the majors with a victory. So prior to this tournament, he had just 2 PGA wins outside of the 2 PGAs and 2 US Opens, and he began the final round team with leader Rory McIlroy. Didn't waste much time. 32 on the front side, 33 coming in, wins it going away. The win means he wins the FedEx regular season point race. That's another $2 million. He's pretty much locked up his second straight Player of the Year award. Brooks Koepka, rock steady and lit.
It's lit!
Bryce Koepka. Sticking with the theme of large fire hydrant shaped dudes having good weekends, Pablo Sandoval, pretty lit.
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy! Scott! Because it's lit!
Pablo Kung Fu Panda Sandoval is having a pretty decent season. There was a stretch, actually earlier in the year, we had an OPS higher than Mike Trout, but then Panda and Trout both went back to their means, and now Panda's much farther behind than Trout in that battle. But just this week, Pablo had a walk-off home run against the Cubs that went exactly 1 inch over the wall in a very similar pitch to the one that Schwarber hit yesterday, and it was great. Just Pablo is so damn fun. The Giants are fun. It's great. He kept that positive flow going strong with another opposite field home run in the 11th of the Giants-Padres game on Friday night, and that was very cool. The cooler part was that the fan who caught the home run ball also had his newborn daughter in a little holder on his chest, caught it with one hand, and cheered, and the kid never woke up. And any of those things happening on a weekend would have been great, but it all happened in one big, beautiful moment. The Giants had played themselves into contention. Pablo is ready to bring back the even year magic in an odd year. It's lit.
It's lit!
My last one's a repeat from last week. The Portland Timbers of a magic Saturday night are lit.
It's lit! Shout out Chavvy! Scott! Because it's lit!
I was actually up in Portland with my daughter and son-in-law watching the match, but we couldn't go because we were at a family reunion, but hustled back to see the taking of the kickoff on FS1. They're playing the Galaxy. They beat them silly 4-0. And yes, last week I featured them here because of their crazy run of success on the road. And now they jumped into 7th in the MLS standings in the West, which is key because the top 7 based on points qualify for the playoffs. But they played spectacular football Saturday night. Couple of goals from Diego Paredes, a gorgeous nutmeg goal from Diego Valeri, and a couple of tremendous saves from keeper Steve Clark. And that's a pretty damn good Galaxy team who was second heading in to play in the West. They'll next play at Minnesota on Sunday, a team they're just 4 points behind. Your Timbers, rolling and lit.
It's lit!
Last one, very quickly. It was very hot in St. Louis this weekend, but Gerrit Cole was hotter.
It's lit!
In June, Cole was the American League Pitcher of the Month, and he was having just as good of a July. In June, he went 3-0 in 6 starts, striking out 49 in 38 innings with a 1.02 whip. July, 4-0 in 5 starts, 51 strikeouts in 34 innings, only 7 earned runs, a 1.85 ERA, and an impossibly low 0.88 ERA. He hasn't lost a game since May. The Astros are 10-2 in those starts since his last loss as well. He was the fastest this year to 200 strikeouts, 212 in 144 innings this year. He might very well be on to win his first Cy Young at this rate. He is lit.
It's lit!
Good call.
Calling it.
All right, break time back. 5 o'clock hour. Sports Talk on a Monday is next. 95.3 The Score.